There is a fifth dimension beyond that which is known to man. It is a dimension as vast as space and as timeless as infinity. It is the middle ground between light and shadow, between science and superstition, and it lies between the pits of man's fears and the summit of his knowledge. This is a dimension of imagination in an area which we call Elder Dragon Journey.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're live at the Elder Dragon Builder podcast. This is your host, Igor. And always with me is my co-host, Niksha. Say hi, Niksha.
Hi, peoples.
We're back after another long period of not being here. Mostly, yeah. This is my fault because I'm back at the work. And I'm also having afternoon shifts, and that sucks.
Yeah, I'm also back at work, so hooray for us.
Hey, it's been literally a month. Sweet.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we'll try to do our schedules properly, but it's been a hell for the last couple of weeks.
It's been hell for pretty much everyone.
Yep.
So, I'm sure that people are all fine with us just being a slightly behind schedule.
But we have a bunch of things to talk about. Niksha, do you have some commandos of the week or anything on that note?
Actually, yeah, I've been playing a bit of Magic for the past couple of weeks. Our local game store opened and their play area opened, so now we can actually play some Magic. And I did play some Commander games and I realized how much... I really don't know who to put as my commander of the week. It's either Golos or Kaikar. Kikar. I'm gonna say Kikar.
I think it's Golos because from what I've been reading in our groups, it's been causing the most epic moments.
Okay. So we're gonna go with Golos. So, here's one of those epic moments. So we're playing a tripod. So there were three of us in a pod. I decided I'm gonna call those tripods from now on. So I was on Golos. One of our friends was on Teferi. And the Planeswalker Teferi, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a Grand Arbiter. So what happened was, I play Oath of Druids, turn two. Okay, Teferi passes. Grand Arbiter plays the Drenith Magistrate, who is, like, he's a really good guy. And he plays the Drenith Magistrate, and my turn, okay, I decide to... do the oath,
trigger.
And mm-hmm. First card, Progenitus. Okay. I am completely fine with this.
And really?
Actually, it wasn't really like turn two, it was like more like turn four, because I know that I flipped into Progenitus, and then I played the red Praetor.
Urabrask,
the hidden one, yeah. And it was like, okay, Progenitus was bad enough, but now it has haste. And even if they wanted to block me, they couldn't, but, you know, now they can't even more.
Protection from every single thing.
Yeah, plus their guys come in tapped.
I mean, even if they don't, what are they gonna do?
So, there was a random Narset for Grand Arbiter, so it was keeping the Teferi player in check, so I was like, okay, Narset can live. I don't really care.
How do you tax a 10-10 protection from everything?
So I started attacking.
You think?
And I wasn't focusing on killing one person quickly. I was more I was sharing the love. And somebody decided to play back to basics. So I don't untap. The arbiter player doesn't untap mostly. And, you know, it kind of slowed me down. It was, completely fine.
But I think you're 10-10 untaps, so you know.
Yeah,
Silver linings and all that.
He was the sequence the Grand Arbiter player had to do to try to stop Progenitus. So, he had to activate top to look at the top three card. No, wait, it wasn't that. He went... what was it? It was a Mystical Tutor to get Merchant Scroll. So he used top to get Merchant Scroll into his hand. Then he had to Merchant Scroll for... Merchant Scroll goes for blue cards, or? It goes for instance.
For blue instant resources, I think.
So wait, so does... Mystical Tutor goes for any instant or sorcery. Yeah, it does.
Merchant Scroll goes for an instant card. So I think it was Merchant Scroll into...
Yeah, it was Merchant Scroll into Mystical Tutor to get Enlightened Tutor.
What?
The Mystical Tutor had to get Enlightened Tutor so he can draw it, so he can tutor Humility. And he didn't get his second white mana because of back to basics. See, it was a really long line to get rid of Progenitus, but yeah, it was in vain. I was just smack, smack, smack.
as you want to do.
Yeah. Of course, nobody else triggered their oath because they don't really have any creatures in deck.
I was gonna say, turns out Teferi and Grand Arbiter. Arbiter has like a couple.
A couple, but not really worth milling half of your deck for it.
I mean, you say it.
I say it, but I don't care. I have a.
Why don't you ever play the Oath of Druids when I'm playing against you? Oh no, I guess I'll mill a bunch of my cards.
I will definitely try to do that next time. I mean, the Oath of Druids, the reason I don't run Mana Dorks, except for Selvala, like, not Explorer Return, but Heart of the Wild. Because Selvala Heart of the Wild is actually pretty good.
Especially like, in your beef.
Absurdly good. Anyhow, that's how I won. And I did get some more foil cards. I did assemble Brokos, and I did do the meme build where you play Oko, you transform Oko, so it's the Planeswalker deck Oko. It does not work with a regular Oko.
Oh.
Because Oko then copies a creature that's not a human, and then you evolve Oko into Broko. So you know, Oko is Broko becomes literally Oko is Broko.
Wow. You're dedicated, I mean.
Yes. I did that a couple of times. It's really funny when you have a 6/6 trampler that has Planeswalker abilities randomly.
Huh.
I mean, Oko is one of the rare Planeswalkers you can actually do that with, because Gideon becomes a human, so... Gideon is a terrible Broko target, as well as being white, so he can't actually be in Brokos.
I mean, if you cheat.
Like I did. Like when I played the Bolas in my KMT deck.
KMT, yeah.
And I was like, what, you're gonna argue against Bolas? Turns out that people still argued against Bolas, and it kind of worked.
How dare they?
I mean, he's Bolas, come on.
What you gonna do, imprison him with his brother in a realm? Oh wait, yeah, you can do that. Anything else that you commanded during the last month?
I mean, I did play with a bunch of my decks. I did make a Marisi deck to punish people. I mean, I built a Marisi deck that's specifically for more competitive decks because I noticed that people don't really attack each other that much.
I mean, unless I'm on the table.
But they do lose a bunch of life to random stuff. So I just made a deck that was more focused on attacking people and forcing them to attack somebody other than me. And it kind of worked. It's kind of like really... It's really tricky for some people.
We actually played one game against the deck, right?
Yeah, you did. And you almost killed me, but I did play a Gisela. And that was
No, that was not the game. You didn't play that again. The game you played against me with that deck was when I cataclysmed, if I remember.
I'm pretty sure you didn't cataclysm. We were playing, but cataclysm didn't occur. Or it might have, but I still had, like, Baneslayer Angel. While you had Alesha, so it was kind of in my favor. I really don't remember. So, Igor, how about you? Do you have any commanders of the week?
Sadly, no. Because, again, work has been a bitch.
Yeah.
I've been mostly spending my time role-playing, and Tess and I have started to do one thing together. We started to watch JoJo and his Bizarre Adventure.
Oh?
Want me to summarize that show? We have yelled, this is so stupid so many times and we love the show. Everything is so over the top. Did you watch Death Note by any chance?
I did.
Remember how it's supposed to be a really smart show and then it turns out everything's so fucking stupid?
I mean, I just watched the first season.
Okay, then you didn't watch them until the show. Basically, that show you expect, you know, to be smart and highbrow and all that. This doesn't take itself seriously, and it's dumb as fuck, and it's wonderful. Like, one example, one of the main characters is supposed to face a vampire, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the vampire says, ha, I know your every move. And then the main guy responds with pulling out a Tommy gun, basically literally out of his ass, and shooting him with the Tommy gun. Like, nobody saw it coming, and we're like, okay, this is the best shit ever.
Yeah, I was thought of starting to watch it as well, but
honestly, do it.
I should.
It's stupid. It's, holy crap, is it dumb. You have Nazis in the show, by the way, who somehow have machine guns embedded in their chest.
I mean, as Nazis had, historically had.
No, I apologize. Those are not Nazis. They're called German soldiers.
Oh.
In the year 1939, you know.
Oh, okay.
You have so much male almost nudity, it's insane. Barely anybody's wearing clothes. Wonderful. And almost each and every single named character is a rock or metal reference. So... wonderful. I can't recommend it enough.
All right. So I guess JoJo's your commander of the week.
Yes, all the JoJo's.
All the references.
Yes. We have, by the way, googled the JoJo references on Google, and you know what's one of the suggested questions?
Is that a JoJo? Bible?
No. Is Bible a JoJo reference? We clicked on it, and the answer is just, yes, it is. And we just clapped, and we're like, okay, well, this is beautiful.
Okay.
So, yes, everything, including Bible, is a JoJo reference. This podcast is, in fact, a JoJo reference. Let's, want to talk about some actual things?
Yeah, some actual thing recently happened.
So, on June 7th, which is just, you know, like a shy of a week ago, so we're almost on topic, almost fresh, They have announced that commanders from now on will be triggering dying triggers or going to exile triggers.
Yeah, but that's because of how they actually changed the ruling.
There we go.
So
what
the
until
now, when a commander goes to changes zones, whether it goes to your hand, to your graveyard, to your library, anywhere, you can instead send it to the command zone. So it was a replacement effect. Now it's a state-based action. So it's the same thing like when your token dies. It goes, it hits the graveyard, but as a state-based action, it stops existing. So now what happens is when your commander changes zones, like, well, not always. So if it goes to the graveyard or in exile, it hits those places, but as a state-based action, you may put it in your command zone. Which, funnily enough, disables the tricks with the newer versions of Oblivion Rings, so with, like, Banishing Light, which you could exile your, which could exile a commander, and they would put it in the command zone. And when Banishing Light leaves the field, the commander would still return, because it was the same object, regardless of where it went. Now, since it's a new object, because of how the state-based action works, that doesn't work anymore.
We did talk about that little trick with Banishing Light a couple of episodes ago.
Yeah, well, now it doesn't work anymore.
Womp womp.
But what also works now is things that exile commanders, and then at the beginning of some step, they return them. Well, you can actually, like, stifle that trigger. So they don't return. Ever. Uh-huh. And by ever, I mean ever, because it's, for example, Rune exiles a commander, and then you counter the delayed trigger. He remains in exile, so you have to choose whether he goes to exile or command zone.
Sweet.
Which is a thing that will happen to you once, and then you will learn to, like, aggressively kill the Rune player, if not just Rune. Because, I mean, come on, who does that? Who does that kind of thing?
Rune players, apparently.
Well, now they will. They'll do it once.
Also, what works now is Elenda the Dusk Rose and Child of Alara.
Yeah, Child of Alara is, like, actually, like, really, it's more, I mean, it's this is the best change for the Child of Alara, because for Elenda, even with this rules change, you want to reanimate it rather than keep on paying for her cost. Because she's 4 mana, and you're not gonna pay 6 mana, 8 mana, 10 mana. You'd rather keep recycling her from the graveyard, right?
Yeah, generally, but it's nice to have an option.
But Child of Alara, like, you had to dedicate a couple of deck slots to both sacrifice child and to recycle the child. And in 5 colors, you don't really want to do that. You want to be doing cool stuff, I guess, because you're playing 5 colors, so you can do anything you want. So it's a lot more impactful for Child than Elenda, I think.
You say that, but the price that Elenda jumped is super huge.
Yeah, but Elenda is a single set card, while Child of Alara still, you can buy unopened from the Vault Legends and get Child of Alara. Which, by the way, pays for most of the product now.
It was in Annihilation, not in Legends.
It was in Annihilate. Was it? I think mm-hmm. it was. Are you sure?
No, because. Yeah, because I got Legend.
I mean, I got Legend too, and I remember having Child of Alara from a promo set.
Just give me a second. Yeah, it's Annihilation.
Oh. Okay, so, well, There you go. Now you have one good card in from the Vault Annihilation.
But it's in on European markets is like 12 to 13 euros now. The height, right? TCG player, 29 for... Yeah, 29 bucks.
Yeah, their prices are kind of different than
whack.
Ours. It's because of their
whack.
the market structure is different than over the sea.
Don't you love European market laws?
I mean, it's probably not even because of the laws, it's just because how it's structured, I guess.
Yeah, but generally what I'm referring to is that European laws tend to favor the customers instead of the company.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But prices aside, how it was. I think this is how it was supposed to be before. But then again, I really didn't see this change as a necessary change. This, like, came completely out of the blue. Like, I don't know. It seems like just such a random thing.
It's a fine of a change. I don't actually mind it.
I mean, we'll see what maybe they know about some cards that would benefit from this. Some upcoming commanders, I guess.
I mean, even if it just benefits this couple that we mentioned, it that's fine. It was always a bit unintuitive to explain to people.
Yeah, that was a replacement effect. Excuse me. Okay, didn't sneeze.
Good job.
Yeah, so it was kind of weird, like, everything works with these state-based actions, and there's this commander that uses replacement effects. So, yeah, this is more in line with Magic rules. So, yeah.
So, yeah.
We can experiment with commanders dying.
And it's making a game easier for some. So, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
That's it for the triggers, right?
Oh, and it makes Inname as one better.
Oh, God, it does, yes.
Because before, it had to hit exile, and you can't hit exile and go to the command zone, because you have to pick either one. Now it hits exile and then goes to the command zone.
Still, I don't know if anybody's gonna be playing it, but you know.
I mean, if I get my hands on the foil one, I'll probably...
I was gonna say I have an unfoiled one, but you know.
No. It has to be foiled to be worth my time.
Want to move on to M21 spoilers?
Yeah, let's.
Or as you called it, Masters 21.
Oh, this is that. Oh, this set seems more like a Masters set than a Core set, yeah.
So, guess I'll take the white card because that's what I do.
Sure.
So we have Vanilla Gideon here. Buster Kit, who won in a white. Legendary Planeswalker Bastry, he comes in with 3 loyalty, +1, put a +1/+1 counter on up to 1 target creature. It gains indestructible until the end of turn. -2, whenever one of more non-token creatures attack this turn, create that many 1/1 white soldier tokens that are tapped and attacking. And -6, you get an emblem with, at the beginning of combat in your turn, create a 1/1 white soldier creature token, then put a +1/+1 counter on each creature you control.
I mean...
Opinions, thoughts?
Yeah?
I'm asking you, your opinions, thoughts?
Well, he's... He is a 3-mana walker. And he... I mean, he doesn't really do that much. But he does... He's really focused on, like, token stuff. And non-token stuff. So, yeah, he's a... He's kind of hard to evaluate. I mean, generally, planeswalkers aren't that good in multiplayer.
Yep.
But, you know, giving a creature indestructible until end of turn, it can save you from... I mean, you wrath the board and your thing survives. That's a play.
Mm-hmm.
You have... I mean, maybe even for, like, Marisi. Because you want your creatures to survive combat and you don't want them to efficiently block. So making a...
Mm-hmm.
Like a Trample Death Toucher... indestructible is really good because now they can't just chomp with a bunch of dudes and kill your stuff. So
he's aggressive.
Yeah, Basri. I see Basri has some place, but it's not like an oppressive 3-mana walker.
Yeah, you know what I mind about him? His stupid weapon. Because it's really bad if you use it as an axe. Because the head is actually... You have too much of an axe head. So you can't actually strike efficiently with it. It's shitty as a sword because what the hell is that curve and you have no guard? You can't really use it as a spear. What the hell is this?
I mean, it's probably a sand-shaping weapon.
I don't know. Because I know Egyptian weapons to some degree. It looks like nothing... It looks similar to one axe that was found in one pharaoh's tomb, but not.
Maybe it's a combination of more Egyptian weapons. Maybe not it's a millennium item.
Yeah. Nisha, you mentioned that Planeswalker is generally not good in multiplayer, right?
Yeah.
What about next one?
Well, next up, Teferi, Master of Time. For 2 blue-blue... It's a legendary planeswalker Teferi with 3 loyalty. It has a passive, since it's the set of Teferi, so it has a passive. You may activate loyalty abilities of Teferi, Master of Time, on any player's turn, anytime you could cast an instant. So it's a Teferi with a built-in older Teferi ultimate.
Mm-hmm.
Plus 1, draw a card, then discard a card. Minus 3, target creature you don't control phases out. And minus 10, take 2 extra turns after this one.
A bunch of people got crazy about the minus 10, but I'm like, the plus 10 and minus 2 are really good. Like, really, really good.
All of his stuff is, mm-hmm. like, really good, and it's not overpowering, so...
Mm-hmm.
This Teferi is like the least oppressive Teferi in a long, long time.
Discounting the Planeswalker decks, right?
Yeah, discounting the Planeswalker deck versions.
Honestly, because... I was expecting something way more broken. This is like, okay, honestly, yeah, this is for something standard and modern, it's fine. Or at 4 mana slot, it's competing with the Mind Sculptor, so...
Yeah, I don't think he's gonna do anything in Modern. While in Pioneer...
Good.
In Pioneer, it's a different story.
Does it break anything?
Oh, wow. Wait. Well, Teferi, Master of Time is, like, really sweet because in Commander, like, the... Keranos, the God of Storm. Mm-hmm. He works wonders with him.
Oh, yeah.
He works really well with Keranos because, like, every turn you get to loot and every turn you get to trigger Keranos.
Boom.
So in a multiplayer game, you start at 3, he goes up to 4, and by your next turn, he's at 4, 5, 6, 7. Your next turn, he's at 7 loyalty. So if nobody's attacking Teferi, and nobody's threatening Teferi, you're gonna get those 2 extra turns fairly quickly.
So maybe they should be threatening Teferi.
They definitely should.
So what I'm hearing is people play more aggressive.
I mean, everybody's gonna play more aggressive when they see Teferi, Master of Time, because this ability is really good for multiplayer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But let's not remember that... let's not forget that he uses the words phase out on a standard card.
Yep.
I mean, this is the only card in the set that has phasing, but...
For now.
It was in Morrow's, like...
I mean, I figured they were not gonna put phasing on common, but, you know.
Yeah, but in Morrow's, like, hints, they said that they'll use it, that one card will have a 20-year-old,
Mechanic.
Which,
and it's
thankfully,
it's
is not banding.
So yeah, he's pretty fine in Commander. Nothing too broken, but you know.
Yeah, he's pretty fine in other formats. Like I said, he's the... This is a Teferi I don't mind facing against, because he doesn't really... He's not really oppressive.
You mean you get to actually play Magic?
Yeah, I get to play Magic. And I... Even though I do own a couple of three fairies, I still think they're a mistake.
Oh, definitely.
Like, at three mana, it should have said that players can't play spells during opponents, during, well, it's not their turn. Like, it should have been symmetrical, and like at four, five mana, it should be asymmetrical. Probably at five mana, yeah. That would be fair. He can keep his loyalty and his abilities, but, you know, you drop him turn three, and he protects himself and draws you a card. And for the rest of the game, if you manage to keep him alive, your opponent just doesn't... He's playing Hearthstone, you're playing Magic.
I don't think that our listeners need to tell us that Teferi was a mistake of a card.
So yeah, people were very, very,
concerned
about this set being a Teferi set, but it's like, it's fine. This Teferi is completely fine.
I think after five, the big Teferi and three Teferi, they were like, okay, we need to rain shit down.
Yeah.
Want to talk about the next card?
Yeah, next up.
It's everybody's favorite traitor. It's Liliana. Vaker of Dead. For two and a black, for loyalty. Plus one. Each player discards a card. Each opponent who can't loses three life. Minus three. Target creature gets -6/-6 until the end of the turn, where X is the number of cards in your graveyard. And minus seven, you get an emblem with. At the beginning of combat on your turn, put target creature card from a graveyard onto the battlefield under control. It gains haste.
So, my first thought was 16 rec when?
I mean, why not?
I mean, definitely. So, you have like the 8 recs, you have Davriel, and you have Liliana.
You kinda have the Lily with Veil just up-costed with her.
Yeah, but Lily of the Veil doesn't lose you life.
Oh, I mean...
That's the rack part of Liliana. The each opponent who can't lose three life.
Oh, no. I'm not focusing on the Lily of the Veil for that. I'm just comparing the first and second ability.
Oh, yeah. They're kind of... They are similar. Like
yeah,
the
yeah.
Plus
I think
one...
they were going with that.
Mm-hmm. The plus one does force both players to discard. Mm-hmm. The minus ability is a single target removal, just like Lily of the Veil.
Mm-hmm.
But the ultimate is like completely different.
Yes.
Like Lily of the Veil wins the game.
Some
of the time.
I've seen people recovering from that. They just be like, yeah, sure, fine, no problem.
Yeah, I have. Because you know they have to.
All in all. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I was just gonna say that when you assemble Tron and then you just keep a Tron piece in hand, so when they divide incorrectly, you can come back from it. Easy peasy. Mm-hmm.
What you see,
this is the part where she survives after ultimating, so she's still a big problem.
What I was gonna say, she's fine. She's a good planeswalker, not much more to say.
Yeah.
She's gonna be fine in Kroxa.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Oh, discard. Discard again.
What card? No card.
So, yeah. Next up.
Also, I mean, I like the art.
Oh, yeah. All of the arts are beautiful, not considering some stupid weapons some people might be having.
No, I know that there's an alternate art version of Liliana for that, you know, extended art, but I like this one a lot more than the extended art one.
This one humanizes her a bit.
Yeah, this her after the contract.
I mean, not just humanizing as in, you know, no tattoos. Generally seems to be more of a, you know, actually humane person.
Yeah, I mean, somebody told me, I can't remember who, but apparently this is her, like, trying to find herself after the War of the Spark.
I thought you were gonna say to figure out whom is she gonna betray next.
I mean, she's probably gonna go find some poor folks to betray.
Want to talk about the next card, which I'm kind of sad about?
Since we're already talking about cards. Chandra, Heart of Fire is 3 and red with 5 loyalty. Plus 1, discard your hand, then exile the top 3 cards of your library. Until end of turn, you may play cards exiled this way. Plus 1, again. Chandra deals 2 damage to any target. At minus 9, search your graveyard and library for any number of red instants and or sorcery cards, exile them, then shuffle your library. You may cast them this turn. Add 6 red. So what makes you so sad about this card?
She's generally...
Like
plus, but, just each ability is like, eh.
Like, you mean like more so than the others?
Yes.
I see it like...
generally, like, we had a couple of really good Liliana's Chandras, I mean, lately.
Mm-hmm.
So I was hoping we would continue the trend. Because last couple of Chandras, really good. The 6 mana one, the 3 mana one, the Torch of Defiant.
Yeah, but I see it this way. Once Experimental Frenzy rotates in 3 months, Chandra is definitely going to be the go-to substitution, because the plus 1, once you're out of fuel, is basically draw 3 cards. And plus 1 for draw 3 cards is super powerful.
Yeah, but commander-wise?
Commander-wise, yeah, if you're not into some...
Yeah.
If you're... It's more for a, like, a deck that doesn't need your a hand, I guess.
Hazaret, I guess, comes to mind.
Hazaret, okay. I mean, yeah. The Chandra's 5 mana, so she fits into an Obosh build with an Obosh companion.
Yeah.
Deals damage at plus 1. With Obosh, it's 4 damage. With Torbrand, it's a lot of damage.
Haha.
I mean, I see her in line with the rest of the Planeswalkers, so she does have some... She has abilities that give you an advantage, but she's not oppressive. So, but yeah, not really that much to... if you have a full hand, then she works really well with the Shark Rider.
Definitely, yeah.
But, you know, you're gonna have to... Get your cards back. I mean, in the black-red build, you have that...
I mean, again,
Shadow of the Grave, right? Is it Shadow of the Grave? Which returns all cards that were... Yeah.
Yes, I think so.
So, there. You can bypass Chandra's downside.
Now, we ready to go to the next card? I know it's my turn, but I think you should, because... This one is your homeboy. And he's back, so, you know.
Okay, so Garrick Unleashed is a 2 and green, for 4 loyalty. Plus 1, up to 1 target creature gets plus 3, and gains trample until end of turn. Minus 2, you create a 3-3 green beast creature token. Then, if an opponent controls more creatures than you, put up a loyalty counter on Garrick. And minus 7, you get an emblem with, at the beginning of your end step, you may search your library for a creature card, put it on the battlefield, then shuffle your library.
Now, this guy is fun.
This guy is... He's fine. So, plus one is a really aggressive plus. Like, that's super aggressive. And, you know, it can come in, like, before or after a questing beast. If it comes after a questing beast, that's, like, that's a lot of damage. I mean, it gives trample to a questing beast.
Because it needed it, right?
Because questing beast needed trample. Minus two, that can be a minus one. Important to know that if he's at two, he dies before he can get the counter.
Mm-hmm. Yep, yep.
But he does work nicely with the Cursed Huntsman.
Yeah.
And minus seven, it's, well, you know, you're gonna win the game. You're gonna win the game. So
this is he's a cool guy. Even in multiplayer, he's a cool player.
Yeah,
I mean, like your face.
Oh, there is always gonna be someone that has more creatures than this. Unlike the first Garrick, this one is like super aggressive. The first Garrick could be more. He gave mana, so you know.
If I have to target this Garrick or the first Garrick, I'm going for the first Garrick.
Oh, definitely, because the first Garrick is like the best walker ever.
The ticking time bomb, you mean?
Yeah.
A couple of games, I think you can remember playing with Tess, just like, okay, he untaps a couple of lands, it's fine. And then Tess is like, yeah, I'll give him +3/+3 to all my...
And trample. Like,
oh, our face. Oh.
Ouch.
You just forget that it's a -4. And he comes with 3, right?
Mm-hmm.
You just forget about it.
Yeah, he does it the next turn.
This one is much more tame, and I like this. I'm just sad he didn't keep his Planeswalker killing persona.
Yeah, he's much more calm now.
I don't like
it. But he's now more... he's now more... more brutal. Because... Vivian took the place of the more utility side of Green Planeswalkers.
Mm-hmm.
So Garrick is here to, like, aggressively smash faces.
Yes.
While Vivian does, like, all that helping you summon stuff. Things. Like, who cares about that when your opponent is, like, at zero life?
Also... Since I'm criticizing weapons this episode, right?
Yeah.
Garrick's axe actually quite shitty.
I mean, he's been using that axe forever.
Yes, but
he doesn't think it's shitty.
You know how in fantasy you see those huge axes with huge axe heads?
Mm-hmm.
You generally want it to be smaller so you can concentrate all the force on that point.
I mean, I'm not gonna argue with Garrick.
I mean, you couldn't. I think Garrick mostly uses the attacks not because, you know, he just smacks you with it. Doesn't matter if it's focused or not.
I'm pretty sure that Garrick can use any part of his body as a lethal weapon. He does it, the axe is more for show.
I think axe is here just to chop some wood.
Yeah.
There we go. Next up, we have Mangara, the Diplomat.
Oh, yeah. This is what you always wanted, is it?
Yes. The Discord might have been hype about this card. For 3 and a white, a legendary creature, human cleric, 2/4, with wonderful Howard Lyon art, by the way, a lifelink. Whenever an opponent attacks with two creatures, if two or more of those creatures are attacking you and or a planeswalker in control, draw a card. But it doesn't end there. Whenever an opponent casts their second spell each turn, draw a card. Ooh. Next shot, what is this? A mono-white card, and it says, draw a card.
Yeah, I don't know, I'm scared too. I mean, white Finally, drawing cards? What?
Rosewater did say on his latest blogger talk that they're changing the way that white approaches card draw.
Well, okay, hell, it's about damn time.
Uh, I mean, I feel sorry for Rosewater because for last, like, I'm guessing like 2 years, he's been taking shit for the way that White has been approached. And he's like, we're changing in a couple. You leave me alone.
Yeah, it's like, guys, it's fine. We added card draw to White. We just can't show you for the next 4 years, okay?
I just remember that Kenobi had like a month ago that video about White, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think Rosewater saw it. He was like, just wait a bit. Shut the fuck up for a second. I want to hear Rosewater swear, by the way. I just want to hear how that sounds.
Yeah, I can actually confirm that not being able to talk about some things is so frustrating.
Really? How would you know that? but yeah, this card as standalone general, not bad actually for mono white. As an addition to Alicia's Horde, oh my god. We can get this back, we can do this card with some cards. Sadly, not a perfect card. This guy can block so many things for like days.
Mm-hmm.
And it is gonna draw you cards.
But it's probably not going to block a lot of stuff. Because they...
Why? Yeah. They're going to be attacking you.
If they're going to attack you, they're going to attack you with one Death Touch boy.
Mm-hmm.
Which you'll be like... you know, which you can't like... kill him. You can't kill him. So he gets his card draw.
Look, I'm just saying, there might be a 3-2 first striker as your legend.
Oh, yeah.
Backing you up. But yeah, Mangara blocks so many things. Blocks random Garak tokens. Easily. Blocks Timna and all her stupid little.
Blocks Yuriko.
It's not boltable.
It's not boltable, yeah.
Like, this is a really good card and I'm gonna get this.
Yeah, well, as a commander, I always... Like, by default, I see Heliod as the default wild commander.
Yes, because he's easiest to combo with. He's a really, really good commander. And indestructible and all that comes with that.
Yeah, Heliod and my second pick would be Elesh Norn. Because building around Elesh Norn is also super easy. And efficient. When Mangara... Yeah, Mangara works... A lot better in the 99.
Yeah, but even if you build it as a commander, it's fine.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just surprised to see Mangara, because the last time I saw Mangara, he was in exile with 4 of my opponent's permanents.
The good old Mangara trick.
Yeah.
But you know why Mangara is back in the set, right?
No. To give white card draw?
No. This is a Teferi set, right?
Yeah.
And Kerbeck and Mangara are big part of his Teferi's history.
Oh.
Back in Jamura.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I mean, you have Kerbeck, you have Mangara, you have Teferi's wife
mm-hmm.
in the set. You have Jor-El, Empress Jor-El.
Mm-hmm.
That's all the colors. And Teferi himself in blue, yeah. So you have parts of his past sprinkled along the set.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Want to talk about the next card? We had a couple of words about that card before the show.
Yeah. So it's Discontinuity. It's 3 and triple blue for an instant. As long as it's your turn, this spell costs 2 blue less to cast. So it's 1 and a blue. It says end the turn.
Hell yeah.
So it's a time stop with an upside.
Or downside, yeah, upside, yeah.
The only downside is that it's triple blue.
Mm-hmm. A bit more difficult to cast.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, finally, blue got a really efficient fog on their turn.
Yeah. Now blue can fog themselves.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing that this spell is actually missing is split second. It's your turn.
Yeah.
If it's your turn.
But they didn't want to bring back another mechanic.
Yeah. This card is interesting.
It's interesting, but I don't see it. Like, if you're not playing Time Stop, you're Chances are you're not playing discontinuity either.
Basically, what we said before the show, this is the interesting, not a good card, but it's interesting.
It's more toolboxy.
Yeah.
Also, the art is really bizarre.
I don't see who's the artist. Volkan Baga or somebody? That's the art.
Yeah, Volkan Baga.
Art style. Oh, yeah, it is. The art is specific. The art is wonderful. I wouldn't mind having that on the wall. just as an art.
Just a guy chopping his fingers off.
And time. But art itself is beautiful.
Yeah.
Next card is also kind of boring, but an exciting reprint. Grim Tutor for 1 black-black, sorcery. Search your library for a card, put it into your hand, shuffle your library, you lose 2 life. We haven't seen this in Portal 99.
I think it was a starter card.
Oh, starter, yeah.
And you know, it had a pretty pricey price. Yes.
The problem, it only had the high price because it was printed in one set only.
Yeah, so this is like a money reprint, but this money reprint will like completely, like, it won't be worth much.
I mean, it's already tanked in price, that version, on the card market.
Yeah, it's because Grim Tutor isn't really a good tutor. Because
it's better than Diabolical.
Yeah, but it's just 1 mana less. So for Commander, it's like whatever. You have better tutors in there. For Modern, it's like I don't know if Demonic Tutor would be played in Modern.
Demonic, I think it would. It's in one combos, and a black.
It would be a combo card, but
yeah. But generally, tutors more often in a bunch of formats are, you know, combo cards.
Yeah, I mean that's why they use the Hellbent tutor sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. But this, if you're not running, you know, like Vampiric, Demonic, and all those tutors, if you run all those and you need one more, this is a fine addition, I guess.
Yeah, it's better than Diabolic Tutor because, you know, 1 mana less is, it can be significant.
But it's not super high competitive.
Yeah, so
it's fine.
It's not going to be a $200 card. It's going to be like more of a
15 to 20.
I'd say $4 to $5 card, really.
Depending.
Honestly.
What I was going to say about this card, the showcase version of this card.
Oh, yeah, yeah, pretty nice.
Holy crap, it's wonderful. If I actually wanted this card, I would maybe get that showcase version, but I'm not really dying for this, so...
Mm-hmm.
Niksha, want to talk about the really, really kind of bland but exciting card?
I mean, the next two are both. Fire Emancipation, 3 triple red for an enchantment that triples your damage. It triples your damage.
It triples the damage you do.
Yeah.
Your damage would imply, you know, the damage you get.
I mean, if you deal your damage to yourself, you know.
I wouldn't recommend that. Even though, yeah, Shocklands are suddenly much more dangerous.
No, Shocklands actually tell you to pay life.
Oh, yeah, you got the...
Pain lands, deal damage. Yep.
Ouch. Did you want to bolt yourself to...
I tap. Like, Shivan Reef suddenly deals 3 damage to you. Which is fine if you're running the demon guy.
Villas?
Yeah. So it's a mini combo with Villas, I guess.
I guess.
Or
many things are.
If you're playing if you're playing Boros, which has Darien as your hidden commander, then you play Fire Emancipation, then bolt yourself, you get a bunch of soldiers.
By the way, not even mentioned Villas. The Grim Tutor and Villas are kinda BFFs.
Yeah, but any card that makes you lose life is kind of BFF with Vilis. Like, in my experience, what's he called? The stupid...
Razaket?
No. The headed ogre that deals damage to you. Whenever a player casts an non-creature spell. Rurikthar.
Oh, Rurikthar, yeah.
Rurikthar is also BFF with Vilis.
I mean, yeah, definitely.
So, yeah. Fire Emancipation, it's like, it's a more fine. Costly Furnace of Wrath, but it also does more damage.
If you're playing something like Torbrand or something like that, just run both.
Sure.
Yeah. What I was gonna say, we did mention Questing Beast earlier, right?
Mm-hmm.
Wanna see its bigger, dumber cousin?
Let's.
Elder Gargaroth, for 3 and a green, it's a 6-6, creature beast, vigilant reach trample. Whenever he attacks or blocks, choose one. Create a 3-3 green beast creature token, you gain 3 life, or draw a card. Now, I'll just say what Tess mentioned, she's like, there is no 6 extra abilities, this is a dumb card, why would you play this? This just does like 4 things. This is dumb.
Yeah, that was my first impression. My first impression was, this can't be real, right? This isn't, like, actually what they're doing. Turns out it is.
If Questing Beast is...
And guess what? A lot of people are saying that, like, this card is just unplayable. Because it...
Yeah.
It actually... Is. I mean, it seems like it does a lot of things, but it actually does nothing, because Questing Beast attacks the turn it enters the battlefield.
Yeah, and that's a big one.
Like, there's Uro, and we all know what Uro does.
Everything?
Everything. Uro does everything this does, but better.
Yeah, that's kind of... Aw. So... Gain a life, you... Play lands, you draw cards, life is good.
So yeah, I don't see this as an Elder Gargan or as whatever this thing is. So I don't see it as an Elder Gargaroth problem. I see this as an everything else problem. Like this shows more how Uro is not okay. You know?
And how quick? A bit too much.
Yeah, Uro was pushed a bit too much. While
just
this.
A bit.
And in a world where Uro doesn't exist, this seems slightly better.
Yeah.
But still, not really that impactful. I mean, I would much rather it didn't have draw card. And it said whenever it attacks or enters the battlefield.
But Miksha, playing green, how are we not gonna... That's what it does, right?
Oh yeah, I forgot that green has to draw cards.
Moving on?
Yeah.
Bank Slayer Angel is reprint, so no need to talk about that, but it's nice to see her again.
Mm-hmm. No longer gonna slay any banks.
Yeah, this was one of the first $40 standard cards.
Mm-hmm.
Storming Entity, no need to talk about that one, right?
I mean, it's a 2-mana, 3-3 Flying Prowess thing. Nothing special,
it's
really.
It's generally gonna be 5-mana, could be casting around that map. Next one I think you have to...
Oh, yeah. Massacre Worm, though. So Massacre Worm is back. He did command a pretty substantial price tag, being in a small set, you know. So yeah, Massacre Worm, definitely a welcome reprint for a lot of people that wanted to play black in Commander.
That was 8 or 9 years ago, right?
Yeah.
Holy crap.
Massacre Worm is old, and... Wow, his price isn't even dropping that much. I mean, he did have a lot of oscillations in price, but he always was in the... Okay, he's like 30-40% cheaper. Okay, that's actually kind of a lot. Sure, but still. Anyway, a welcome reprint, a cool reprint, and it's still in the same standard as Massacre Girl for now.
Ooh.
So, you know, Massacre Girl, and then when you think the coast is clear, Massacre Worm. And then you die.
What I'm seeing, the price is around like 4 euros now.
Yeah. Actually, I mean, sweet. I'm watching and the first listed is 7.
I'm watching the M21 version.
The which version? Oh yeah, M20. I'm watching the Mirrodin version.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, definitely, yeah. The Corset version will be cheaper. Because, you know, the Mirrodin Besieged one has a Phyrexia symbol, so it's automatically cooler.
Plus, less supply.
Yeah.
I was gonna say, this card exists mostly to wreck my decks, but you know.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about a new card.
Mm-hmm.
Terror of the Peaks. 3 and a red. It's a 5/4 dragon. Flying, spells that your opponent cast the target to the Terror of the Peaks, cost an additional 3 life to cast. Whenever another creature enters the battlefield under your control, Terror of the Peaks deals damage equal to that creature's power to any target. Holy crap.
Okay, yeah, this is a playable dragon.
You know whom this dragon likes? Purphoros.
I mean, sure.
Enters the battlefield, 2 damage. Also, here you have like 6. Fuck you.
Yeah, wait, this effect exists on that, it's Pandemonium, right?
Pandemonium and Warmstorm Surge.
Yeah, this is Warstorm Surge, you know, just for you. Your own personal Warstorm Surge. And, you know...
Warstorm Surge is always free.
Yeah.
Pandemonium is for everybody.
Also, you know, you wanna get rid of terror, you gotta pay the price.
They go to bounce it, they pay 3 life, and then you red elemental blast it.
This, like, it's a really corner case scenario, but remember the Thunderbreak Regent that said that when you target a dragon, it deals 3 damage?
Yes.
So if you somehow had protection from red, you would, like, not take any damage. Well, this one doesn't care about your protection. It just says, like, you wanna kill me, pay the tax. So if you're at 3 or less life, you can't even kill it.
Fuck you, pay me. I like this guy.
Yeah, this guy's super cool. I mean, for any kind of token generating strategy, like for that, the new guy that populates. I mean, just create a token copy of Terror and keep populating it. And see how many people will be happy about that.
Play this guy in Krenko.
Yeah. Like,
honestly, you could play this in Krenko super easy.
This card is... I see this card as highly playable in multiple formats, like in Commander, definitely.
In Limited, definitely.
Limited, yeah. I mean, he's not as good as Elder Gargaroth in Limited. Like,
yeah.
If you have Elder Gargaroth, you're forcing green no matter what cards you have in green. You're forcing green. If it's
third,
like,
pack, you're opening it, you're like, well, I guess I'm splashing green now.
Yeah, it's like your third pack, and you're like not even close into green, and I'm like, I guess I'm green now. Yeah, pretty much. But yeah, Terror of the Peak is really good in Commander. It's gonna be really good in Standard. Probably Pioneer. It could be good in Pioneer.
Mapo. I want to talk about the card that we know is good in multiple formats.
Oh, yeah.
Scavenging Ooze is back.
Yeah, Scavenging Ooze. Really good reprint. It started growing in price, so it's nice to keep it down to the ground.
That's a card that's held to heaven in any format.
Yeah, and now it's available in all formats.
Hooray! But no need to dwell on Scavenging Ooze, right?
Yeah, it's a reprint. A really good reprint.
We can pick Heaven's because it's a bit boring.
Yeah, Pursued Whale is cool for flavor purposes, but not...
Because it's Moby Dick. It's
Dick
and the best shit out. Hooded Blight Fang, though. Read us what that does. That's an interesting card.
So it's a 2 and a black for a creature snake. It's a 1/4 with Death Touch. Whenever a creature you control with Death Touch attacks, each opponent loses 1 life and you gain 1 life. Whenever a creature you control with Death Touch deals damage to a Planeswalker, destroy that Planeswalker. Well, hooray. Finally, a way for my death-touching walking ballista to actually kill Planeswalkers. Efficiently.
You know who this pairs up really well with?
Who?
Archetype of Finality.
Oh, it gives your creatures death touch, right?
Mm-hmm. Guess what?
I also saw on Arena when I was playing Brawl. I also saw some people. I saw quite a bit of Vraska decks. The Death Touch Vraska that makes tokens with Death Touch. So this is a really good card for that kind of deck. I mean, if you're playing a bunch of Death Touchers, well, now they basically go through creatures without having to go through them. So yeah, it's nice. It's a nice upside. Also, the fact that that your Death Touch creatures instantly kill Planeswalkers is also really good.
Next up we have the Stuffy Doll.
Mm-hmm.
So, Bresh Taunter. For 4 and a red, it's a 1-1 goblin, indestructible, and whenever he's dealt damage, he deals that much damage to target opponent. 2 in red, tap, Bresh Taunter fights another target creature. This is good because Stuffy Doll had a problem, it came into play and you choose chose an opponent, right?
Mm-hmm.
Chose the player, actually.
Yeah.
But this is like, no need to choose.
And also Stuffy Doll had a problem where it could only deal 1 damage to itself. But Bresh Taunter, he's gonna deal all the damage to himself.
Oh, you have that nice juicy 2020, well. I'll fight you, good sir, I'll fight you. It's time for some fisticuffs.
It's like, you play Bresh Taunter and suddenly nobody plays their, Lord of Extinction.
See, at that moment you need to start quoting Monty Python. I fight in a general direction and all the other.
Also pairs really nicely with... it pairs nicely with Terror of the Peaks.
Oh. Okay. Okay.
Terror of the Peaks. You have a Bresh Taunter in play. Next turn, I guess you Oath of Druids into a Progenitus, and suddenly Terror deals 10 damage to Bresh Taunter. Yeah, I mean, kind of fun.
You could do that. You take an extra step just to be funny, right?
Yeah.
I'm okay with that. I'm super down with that. what's next? The kitty cat?
Yeah. So, I think this is your card, since it's a cat.
Speaking of, my cat is like a meter away from sleeping. Feline Sovereign, 2 and a green. It's a cat, obviously. 2/3. So, Alesha could technically bring this back, but...
But...
Other cats you control get +1/+1, and they have protection from dogs. Whenever one or more cats you control deal combat damage to a player, destroy up to 1 target artifact or enchantment that player controls. This, first of all, could have been a white card. Fuck you, wizard.
And second of all, wizards apparently think that cats are dicks.
They also think that cats are better than dogs.
That's a fact.
And, you know, this makes all your cats assholes.
Better.
Also assholes. Like, they just go around just run around and knock, like, omnisciences off the table.
As they should.
Like, they like, see omniscience, yeah, push. Yeah. They just
push. Also, Nixon, do you notice one thing? It's not protection from hounds.
Yeah, it's protection from dogs. And I'm going to go over the dog next. Just gonna skip some spoilers until.
Yeah, makes sense.
So, pack leader is a one in a white. It's a 2/2 creature dog. Other dogs you control get +1/+1. Whenever pack leader attacks, prevent all combat damage that will be dealt this turn to dogs you control.
But it doesn't matter, because cats have protection. Ha! Fuck you.
Yeah. I mean, they obviously can't hurt each other, so dogs can't hurt cats, while cats can't be blocked by dogs.
Yep. Cats are way more aggressive.
I mean, cats can't harm dogs either.
But, yeah. Cats can't harm dogs on the defense, but they can harm them on the offense.
Yeah, and, you know, there's a stark difference in flavor text as well.
Yep.
Where Feline Sovereign says, dogs beg, cats lay claim. Which is very, you know, he's being an asshole about it. While the pack leader has, he will be your loyal champion and his pack your protectors. All he asks for is a full belly, a spot by the fire, and all the love in your heart.
Somebody's being a little bitch, if you ask me.
Also,
see, it's funny because bitch are female dogs.
Also, I'm the
funniest person. Yeah.
The art is like adorable.
Both are wonderful.
Both arts are adorable. And yeah, retroactively, all hounds are now dogs.
Yes, Rosewater has finally won that battle.
I mean, how? I mean, there were dogs that were still hounds, but okay.
He's been championing that hounds isn't actually apt because all hounds are dogs, but not all dogs are hounds. So he was like, we should make it all be bloody dogs.
Oh yeah, we got the we'll get to it. Okay.
When we get to it. Next, that's interesting is see the truth.
Mm-hmm.
One and a blue for sorcery. Look at the top three cards of your library, put one of those cards into your hand, and rest on the bottom of your library in any order. So currently it's anticipate, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sorcery speed. If this spell was cast from anywhere other than your hand, put each of those cards into your hand instead.
So it's really good in cast.
It's either a really much worse anticipate, or it's a really good Ancestral Recall.
Or it's a worse
Ancestral Recall, but you know.
Yeah, it's a worse Ancestral Recall that bypasses Narset.
Hoo-hoo-hoo.
Ah, checkmate, Narset.
It's an interesting card.
Yeah, it is definitely interesting. I mean, for Kess, it's a pretty easy include, I think. For Melek, it's like 2 mana, get 6 cards, easy. And for Elsha, right?
Yep.
So it's a. I wouldn't play it in Kikar, because I don't really. I don't have anything other than Breach to play it from my graveyard. But it's a fine card. There are ways to play it. I mean, in standard, you have the Chandra.
Yep.
And
Snapcaster is always a thing.
Snapcaster is a thing. It's a bit shame. It's a sorcery speed for Snapcaster.
Doesn't actually the Torrential Gearhulk not give a shit about Sword?
Yeah, but you know, Torrential Gearhulk can target only instants.
Oh, that's a sad.
It is a sad.
Well, moving on.
Mm-hmm. Or so we got Kervek, the Spiteful. 2BB, 3/2 human warlock, legendary creature. That only says other creatures get -1/-y.
I'll recap what I said in the pre-talk before the podcast. This is a good card, but a really bad legend. If this guy was named Magus of the Betrayal or something like that, like from Knights of Souls Betrayal, I would be all over this creature. I'd be like, yeah, this guy's cool. But that's not Kervek. That's the thing.
Yeah, compared to the first Kervek, this is like...
Who's an asshole.
Yeah, this is...
But let's talk about positives about this card. Is your playgroup running a bunch of dorks? Because our playgroup is.
If yes.
Yeah. Because this, unlike the Plague Engineer, is going to be hitting everything.
Mm-hmm.
Humans kills it. Elves kills it. Wizards dead. So in the 99, I guess, good addition if you need more removal. And you're not running that many creatures.
Yeah, as but, a, I would also like him as a Magus type of creature, mm-hmm. because with two of them, you give everything -2/-2.
Yeah. Either, you know, Magus or maybe even Eidolon of something. Make it an enchantment creature. Bless you.
Yeah. You too.
But imagine just like Eidolon of Betrayal. Works, right?
Yeah.
I'm also minding that they put Kervek the Spiteful in the text.
Mm-hmm.
If this was named Johnny the Spiteful, fine. Cool. I don't mind.
But you remember Kervek differently, so it's...
He has history.
Yeah.
Moving on to his waifu.
That's his
waifu? Teferi's waifu. Teferi's waifu. So, Subira, Tulzidi Caravaneer. 2 and a red, 2/3. Legendary creature, human shaman, for whatever reason. Haste. 1 generic, another target creature with power 2 or less can be blocked this turn. 1 and a red, tap, discard your hand. Until end of the turn, whenever a creature you control with power 2 or less deals combat damage to a player, draw a card. Now, you would think I would jump on this for a less immediately, right?
Only small, yeah.
Small problem is, it has activated abilities. How many times have I been not able to win with Kiki Jiki because of activated abilities, Nick?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So this immediately makes me... So for my build of Alesha, don't think so. But there's builds where you could actually, you know... Yeah, be fine with this. If you're playing Master Cruelties, not a bad addition.
Actually, that's not Teferi's wife, by the way.
Wasn't it?
No, it's the Niambi is Teferi's wife, not uh-huh. Subira.
I thought it was his wife.
No, Niambi is his wife. We got her as well.
Uh-huh, okay. Then I was just a mistake.
Mm-hmm. An honest
that
mistake.
That happens way more often than...
No, wait.
What?
Niambi is Teferi's daughter.
Daughter, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Wait, I'm trying to find...
So is Subira his wife?
Wait. I'm currently on... Yes, she's the wife of the Planeswalker Teferi. Oh. And mother of Niambi.
Okay. Well, we...
Sweet.
Okay, so we got that out of the way.
So I wasn't mistaken. Hooray! So, this card.
Mm-hmm.
If you're playing some deck that plays a Bone Miser effects,
mm-hmm.
something like that, this also triggers that.
It also triggers that Badger thing.
Yes.
Remember the Badger?
From C20, right?
Yeah. It was Surly Badgersaur.
Yes. Also, you don't have to do this before, you know, declared blockers finished. The discarding your hand.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not bad. And it's another way to discard, put cards in your graveyard, which is also fine.
Yeah. And it has so, haste, and haste is a good upside.
Not for my build, but I don't mind the card.
Yeah, I don't see it as a commander unless you're like going all in into two or less power creatures.
This is really good with Felden.
Mm-hmm.
Ignore the, you know, unblockability, discarding a hand.
And with the dragon, and with the, not the dragon shark, with the Sky Shark Raider as well.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm really okay with Subira. I like her.
Also with Riel.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot completely about Riel. But yeah, these cards that discard your hand, including Chandra.
Yes.
Pretty decent with Riel, I must say.
So yeah, overall, Subira is really good.
Yeah.
Like 3 out of 5, 3.5 out of 5 in my book.
Pretty good. Play it.
Next is the Spoder Man.
Spooky Spoder. It's Spore Web Weaver. It's 2 and a green for a 1/4 spider with reach and hexproof from blue. And whenever it is dealt damage, you gain 1 life and create a 1/1 green sapperling.
Fuck you, Monred.
Yeah, and apparently some blue.
I'm guessing the blue is so you can't actually bounce it.
Yeah, it really efficiently blocks those Brazen Borrowers.
Yep.
It doesn't actually take damage from them, so you don't get a sapperling.
But it really well blocks it.
It really blocks them well. It's good against the blue-white flyers that are going to go into standard right now.
Yeah, and against mono-red. Always.
And against mono-red, of course.
Oh, you need 4 damage to burn as well. You'll spend, like, most of the time, 2 burn spells, right?
Yeah, and you get, like, 2 guys out of it. Easy.
And you get 2 life, which is sometimes more important.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Next up, Idol of Endurance is a weird card.
Idol of Endurance is an interesting card.
2 and a white artifact. When it enters the battlefield, exile all creature cards with CMC 3 or less from your graveyard until it leaves the battlefield. 1 and a white and a tap. Until the end of turn, you may cast a creature spell from among the cards exiled with Idol of Endurance without paying its mana.
It's like a mini Lurrus.
Basically, yeah.
It also
like, part of me kind of wants to play this in Lesha, but then again...
It also kind of, like, protects cards in your graveyard.
Yeah, that's not a bad point.
Because when it leaves, all those cards come back to the graveyard. So, yeah, if you're, like, worried about people exiling your graveyard, this is like, okay, I'll just protect it. Send it to exile myself. Haha. Take that.
Basically, you'll recast things by paying 2 mana.
Yeah.
It's an okay card.
Mm-hmm.
Next card is kind of funky. What does it do?
Teferi's Agent's Insight.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 2 and double blue. If you draw a card except the first one you draw in each of your draw steps, draw 2 cards instead. So it's a cheaper Thought Reflection.
But read the flavor text.
Fine. You know more than me. But do you have to be such a show off about it, Chandra Nalar to Teferi?
Apparently Chandra has never met Teferi.
And you know, Chandra is kind of, well, I don't know how Chandra was before, but this new Chandra kind of seems like Teferi isn't the only one that knows more than her.
I mean, I think his agent's insight is
Maybe I shouldn't be splitting my country, sending it into space, and then later returning it onto Dominaria. Kids, don't do that. Also, stay in school.
Yeah, stay in school, definitely. That's the lesson you should take from Teferi's Age of Insight. Just stay in school.
There we go. And don't shift countries from planes.
Yeah, not a good idea.
Standardbearer is fine, I guess. Liliana Standardbearer, 2 and a black for a 3/1 zombie knight with flash. When that is the battlefield, draw X cards where X is the number of creatures that die under your control this turn.
I like this effect.
Mm-hmm.
This is a really, it's a really good effect. Like, obviously for limited, it breaks stalemates.
Mm-hmm.
Because you just go ahead and sacrifice all your dudes and get rewarded. Also, you can straight up sacrifice your dudes and get rewarded.
Even if you, like, block with two guys and they die and just play this guy, it's fine.
Yeah, I mean, 3 mana, 3/1 with flash that draws 2 cards. Actually very good.
That's super playable and limited.
That's pretty playable everywhere.
Plus, he's a knight, and that's kind of important currently.
And a zombie.
Mm-hmm. All in all, the ceiling for him is not, you know, doesn't need to be super high.
Mm-hmm.
Need to be good.
It can be. I mean, you can do absurd things with him.
Mm-hmm.
He's really good with flicker effects, let's say that, too.
Yeah. What does Transmogrify do, Nixon?
Exile target creature, it's a 3 and a red sorcery. Exile target creature, that creature's controller reveals cards from the top of their library until they reveal a creature card. That player puts that card onto the battlefield and shovel the rest into their library. So it's... what's the blue called?
Polymorph?
Polymorph. So it's Polymorph. It's a
you
red
were supposed
polymorph.
To say Luca. It's Luca.
It's not Luca because you can downgrade the creature.
I'm more making fun because Luca was bringing in the stupid Agents of Treachery.
Oh. Well, this won't be bringing any Agents of Treachery. Haha.
Womp womp.
Oh yeah, Agents of Treachery was banned, by the way.
Oh yeah, but does anybody actually? It's a polymorph. Basically, put some kind of Emrakul or something in your deck and, you know.
Oh, yeah! I just remember what else happened since our last show.
Yeah?
Companion was nerfed.
Oh, yeah, it was.
And this was, like, the first significant rule change. Like, base rule changer in, like, a long time.
A while?
Like... So, companions now cost 3 mana, 3 generic mana to be put into your hand. And it's sorcery speed, of course. And it's a player action, so it can't be responded to.
So, there we go.
So, yeah, companions are kind of like... I'm gonna say, like, fixed now, kind of. And I like the change they made, like, to, like, nerf the companion mechanic. Because I would, at this point, I would like to see more companions, because this doesn't make them unplayable, it just makes them not very viable.
Not broken as fuck.
Yeah, they're still really good to have, and now you can actually, like, interact with them in more ways. So, it's cool.
Let's carry on with the Planeswalker's basic companion. Mm-hmm. Garruk's Harbinger, for 1 and a green, it's a creature beast, 4/3, hexproof from black. Whenever it deals combat damage to a player or planeswalker, look at that many cards from the top of your library. You may reveal a creature card or Garruk planeswalker card from among them and put it in your hand. Put the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order. This is fine.
It's really good for a Garruk tribal.
Or just creatures, you know, it's fine.
Or, you know, he lands on 3. Guess who costs 4 mana? That's
Smash
right,
Boy?
Garruk.
Smash Boy. Yay!
And guess what Garruk does? Garruk gives this trample, which it really needs. So, you know, it attacks for 7, and you dig deep. Really deep for a creature or Garak. Seems pretty fine.
Yeah, what does the white one do?
Buster is lieutenant. Now, this one is a bit more busted. So, it's 3 and a white for a 3-4 human knight. Vigilance protection from multicolored. When Buster's lieutenant enters the battlefield, put a +1/+1 counter on target creature you control. So, at worst, it's a 4-mana 4-5. Vigilance protection from multicolored, which is a really good stat line. It also has, whenever Buster's lieutenant or another creature you control dies, if it had a +1/+1 counter on it, create a 2-2 white knight creature token with vigilance.
So, how can we go infinite?
So, you need anything that, any enchantment or any effect that whenever a creature enters the battlefield, you put a +1/+1 counter on it, and a sec outlet, and that's it. That's the infinite, because you're...
Easy peasy.
Because it says, or another creature, not another non-token creature. So all you need now is a payoff.
So what I'm hearing is I need to put this guy in my Helio deck and push the blessings. And something like an offensive.
Yeah, I mean, you need... You just need a payoff, realistically.
Yeah. I was thinking...
I'm gonna say that Bastry's lieutenant is a lot better than Bastry.
Yes, definitely. without a doubt. Easy. I don't think anybody can actually fight you in that one.
Yeah.
Maybe in limited.
Maybe.
If you don't have enough plus synergies, Bastry's lieutenant is not gonna do that much.
He's still a 4-mana 4-5 with vigilance and protection from multicolored.
Yeah, but Buster is gonna just be pumping your guys.
Also, let's not forget that even if you kill him, if he had a +1/+1 counter, you're getting a 2-2 knight as well. So he's pretty good.
Yeah, I'm saying it's debatable which one of them is better. Do we need to talk about the Thieves Guild Enforcer?
Nah, let's go to Conspicuous Snoop.
Speaking of busted cards, right? So, for red-red, it's a creature goblin rogue. It's a 2-2. Play with the top card of your library revealed. Well, that's stupid, right?
Yeah.
You may cast goblin spells from the top of your library. As long as the top card of your library is a goblin card, Conspicuous Snoop has all activated abilities of that card. So, Niksha, why is this bust? This doesn't seem bust.
It doesn't seem busted unless you have Kiki Jiki on your top.
Oh my god, is he breaking something again?
So the combo goes like turn two, Conspicuous Snoop, turn three, Bogart Harbinger.
Yes.
You get Kiki Jiki on top of your deck. You make 1,000 copies of Conspicuous Snoop because he can target himself because he's not legendary.
Yep.
And the last Conspicuous Snoop copies the Harbinger, and you go fetch Mog Fanatic.
Yep.
And you sacrifice your Snoops to win the game.
You know what's a... Cursed Totem.
Cursed Totem is a card, yeah.
Maybe we should be all playing it a bit more often.
Maybe we should be reprinting it in Standard.
Honestly? Yes, please.
You know, so both Pioneer and Modern can have access to such a card.
But, Conspicuous Snoop, good card in Goblin decks,
obviously.
It's a bunch of combo potential. And that art is just wacky.
But really, if Conspicuous Snoop didn't have the last line of text, I think it would be still fine in Goblin decks.
It would be fine in Goblin.
This line is just... I don't know if they really meant for it to add this much combo potential for it, but...
I mean, in quote-unquote actual formats, it's...
It's what? You kind of dropped that sentence.
In quote-unquote actual formats, it's fine. honestly.
We'll see. It probably is, because it needs two cards, and both of those cards can be interacted with, and
yep.
There's a lot of interaction that can be made.
It's gonna be fun when somebody goes to do this in Modern and the person responds with, what is that one mana mill two cards? Thought something, right?
Thought Scour.
Thought Scour, yeah.
I mean, yeah, Thought Scour is in the format. Fatal Push is in the format. There's a lot of removal in the format, so
basically this guy gets hosed by removal.
Yeah, but it also gives like Goblin decks some reach. Which I don't think they really needed it that much, but
your Grenzo Doomsday deck can finally have an additional combo.
Yeah.
It's weird how Geki Jiki finds his way.
Yeah.
In all these stupid combos.
Combo finds its way, always.
Next reprint.
Heroic Intervention, really good reprint. It got really pricey.
Yep.
So, yeah, this will bring the price down a lot.
Necromancer is not that important, right?
I mean, Necromancer is one of those Tron is Dead cards.
Yeah. But no need to talk about it. Volcanic Cell is also kind of eh.
Yeah. Doesn't do anything.
Niksha, but what does Jor-El do?
Jor-El, Mwanvuli Recluse is a one and a green for a 1/2 legendary creature human druid. Whenever you draw your second card each turn, create a 2/2 green cat creature token. And for 4 and double green, until end of turn, creatures you control have base power and toughness XX, where X is the number of cards in your hand.
Because, green usually likes to draw cards.
Yeah, green is really good at drawing cards, as we have learned throughout the years. It's also it's also good at consistently drawing two cards per turn.
I am wishing you are actually kidding, but at this point, yeah, you're saying zero wrong things.
Yeah, so it's only natural that green gets a two mana creature that benefits of its incredible card draw potential. And that once you fill your hand, you have a finisher.
Yeah. I mean, you play her. You have her in play, right?
Mm-hmm.
Your next turn, you draw a card, you go cast a spell, they go to counter it, but ha! Veil of Summer.
Thanks for bro.
You have countered the spell, protected your board, and you get to draw a card and make a dude.
Exactly as green should do.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, why wouldn't it do everything?
Let's move on before you hear me puking on the pot.
So one of the more exciting... Yeah. Yeah?
Containment Priest. Just...
Yeah.
It wasn't that high on price, but this is a good card to have. And it's entering Modern, right?
Yeah, finally it's in Modern.
Yay!
And funny thing is, it makes Vile decks better, but it also makes Vile decks worse.
Yep.
So,
but
I don't...
hey, screw you, new form.
Yeah. Damn, Grizzlebrand. Stupid deck.
But not much more to say about Container. It's a good card.
It's a really good reprint. Yeah, this is like... Really, it's a really exciting reprint.
Containment Priest is one of those cards that are perfectly balanced because when they're good, they're really good. And the rest of the time, they're 2/2 for...
I mean, it's a human.
Yeah.
So there.
Want to talk to us about the biggest Mafia member ever?
Oh, Vito. Thorn of the Dusk Rose is a 2 and a black for a 1/3 Vampire Cleric, legendary creature. Whenever you gain life, target opponent loses that much life. combo decks, by the way.
I mean, at least they didn't make him one white and black.
Yeah.
Because then it would be just a bit trivial.
Also, he has this line where you pay 3 and double black to creatures you control gain lifelink until end of turn, but who cares, really?
Yeah, yeah, cool, it's there.
Yeah, okay. You do a thing.
Hey, Healing Salve is finally, you know, lightning bolt.
As it always wanted to be.
Yep. Lightning Helix is now actually much better.
Yeah. But Vito is also, he's a legitimate commander, because he's the first part of your combo, in your command zone.
Yeah. What do you combo in Mono Black with?
Well, you combo with the thing that says whenever an opponent loses life, you gain that much life.
Oh yeah, it is Mono Black, right?
Mm-hmm.
I heard it as Orzhov for some reason in my mind.
It's Sanguine Bond, right? No, Sanguine Bond is the one where you gain life when... Sanguine Bond is when an opponent loses life, you gain life. Is it?
Yeah.
No.
I think it is. But this guy is a nice combo piece in your command zone.
So Sanguine Bond is whenever you gain life, target opponent loses that much life. So he does same thing as Vito. But the thing is, Sanguine Bond was the more expensive part of the combo. Exquisite Blood is the cheaper one.
Yeah.
So you just need Exquisite Blood now.
Sweet. If only Black had Withers, right?
Yeah.
What Heliod is for Mono White, I guess this guy can be for Mono Black.
Yeah.
Do we need to talk about the Incinerator?
No. I heard people talking about how you play a Bolt, you play another Bolt, and then you play Chandra's Incinerator for one. And I'm like...
Wow!
So your next Bolt does... 3 damage and 3 damage to a creature.
Sweet.
So, instead of Chandra's Incinerator, you could have played another Bolt, and suddenly you played 4 Bolts instead of just 3. And I think that 4 Bolts are better than 3 Bolts.
But hey, in the mirror, they're not gonna getting rid of this guy.
I mean, for Commander, it's fine. It's good for Commander, let's say. Because reducing its cost by a lot is going to be easy.
So, since we're actually talking when we're not talking about it, 5 and a red, it's a 6-6 elemental. Oh. It costs X less to cast, where X is the total amount of non-combat damage dealt to your opponents this turn, trample. And whenever a source you control deals non-combat damage to an opponent, it deals that much damage to target creature or planeswalker that playing. Just to be done with it.
Yeah. So it doesn't double your damage, it just spreads your damage.
Next card is a reprint Azusa Lost But Seeking with the Judge promo art.
Mm-hmm. A really cool reprint. It's you go.
I don't know, I was gonna carry on, but you say.
Oh, what do you want to say? It's kind of worrying, seeing how ramp is good in standard right now. So, you know, they doesn't really need that much help with Azusa, but here it is, Azusa. Also, you know, Pioneer is a format, and Azusa was not legal in Pioneer, so this...
Now it is,
and I'm a bit scared what it's gonna do.
I mean, we'll see, but Commander players, Azusa is getting ripped.
Yeah, Commander players, I remember playing against Azusa decks. It was horrible.
Please, people, play Azusa so I can play Armageddon. Please.
It doesn't help.
Eh.
Azusa players are... Their lands are like... You kill them, you destroy all their lands, but next turn they're just... They just return them, and in greater numbers, somehow.
So what I'm hearing is I need to play Star of Insanity more often.
In my experience, not even that helps. Like, I played against a really good Azusa deck, and it was really miserable. So, let's go on to Root Halo, another...
It's a really good reprint.
A really good reprint, yeah.
And it's one of those good skill testing cards. Okay, what do you name?
You name Grizzlebrand, obviously, right?
Sometimes. Yeah, it's a fun reprint.
Mm-hmm.
I think Miscast, we need to talk about a bit.
Yeah.
I mean, not much to talk about. It's a CDH card.
So go ahead, yeah.
Blue, instant. Counter target instant or sorcery spell unless it's a control paste.
So it's a bit better than this spell? I would say it's better than this spell. Because yeah. This spell can't actually counter sorceries. It does completely counter instants without any downside, while this can be, you know, pay 3 to not get countered, but the versatility of it countering instants and sorceries is really, it's good.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as versatile as Spell Pierce, but it's not gonna replace Spell Pierce, it's gonna replace this spell.
Yep. It's not as broad as the Mana Leak, but it's more mana less.
Yeah. Still, big difference.
I guess moving on?
Mm-hmm.
So what's next?
Well, there's this card, Peer into the Abyss. For 4 and triple black, it's a sorcery that target player draws cards equal to half the number of cards in their library and loses half their life. Round up each time.
Hey!
Now, people might see this as like, you know, pay 7 mana and draw half your deck. This is more of a, you know, pay 7 mana and kill one player. Because you're obviously playing cards that, you know, pain people for drawing cards. And you're reducing their life by half.
Do we say Nekusar right now?
Yeah. Let's go with Nekusar.
Nekusar.
Yeah, it's a Nekusar card, sure.
I haven't said that name in a while.
But yeah, it's a really good... It's a finisher for Nekusar. I mean, it's just a...
I'm not gonna just...
It just gets rid of one player, but...
Still.
One is better than none.
Screw that guy in particular.
Yeah. Or in a pinch, you know, you can just draw half your deck and get a combo piece, I guess, for 7 mana.
I think one of the last rares we need to talk about is the dragon, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what does it do?
Gedrak the Crown Scourge is 2 and a red. For a legendary creature dragon, 5-4 with flying. But it can't attack unless you control 4 or more artifacts.
Oh,
luckily,
no!
It says, at the beginning of your end step, create a treasure token for each non-token creature that died this turn. Oh, I thought
it's
that
a fun card.
I thought that it said at the beginning of your end step, create a treasure token. Oh.
I also thought that. It turns out we were wrong.
It turns out it's not that optimal.
But it's...
I mean, it's for 3 mana, you get a 5-4, so your mythic dragon deals 5 damage.
Hey.
Also, in artifact decks, you don't even need the second part. It just attacks.
Basically, it happens. Bring Sunlight of Feldon or the Reti, right?
It blocks. It can block.
Yeah, it can always block.
Mm-hmm.
And moving on, last thing, I think, in normal, in single colors is Double Vision.
Yeah.
3 and a red. Enchantment, whenever you cast your first instant resources spell each turn, copy that spell, you may choose new targets for copy. Guess what? There's a bunch of spells you can... Like, we can't actually, you know. You know what?
Yeah.
In Uncommons, I think the most important thing is that Ringmare got moved from Rare to Uncommon.
Mm-hmm. Rewind is reprinted.
Cultivate for Commander plays is reprint.
Mm-hmm. And has a really nice alternate art.
Mm-hmm.
And of course,
more
foils.
I was going to say Quirion Dryad, the good old around 2002 vintage staple. That used to be a deck, Quirion Dryad. Ah, good old days. Frantic Inventory, basically accelerated knowledge.
Mm-hmm. So you can play 8 of them in Vintage.
Accumulated knowledge was instant as well.
Uh-huh. Basically, this is accumulated knowledge with different...
Oh, and when Maro was spoiling, was doing the teaser things, he said a human monk. And what I thought was, like, are they really going to put Monastery Mentor in the set? And other people were like, Swift Spear? Wow, that's ballsy. And it turns out it's Jeskai Elder, the limited all-star.
I don't think in comments that there's anything else we need to talk about, right?
There's Archfiend's Vessel. That kind of okay. It's a 1 black for a 1/1 human cleric with lifelink. And when it enters the battlefield, if it entered from your graveyard or you cast it from your graveyard, exile it. If you do, create a 5/5 black demon creature token with flying.
You know what's actually more interesting card? A Village Rites. Black instant additional cost second creature, draw 2 cards.
Oh yeah. That's really good.
So here you're playing Hulk, right?
Yes.
And there we go. In multicolor we have like 2 cards to talk about, right?
There's still some cards here that are interesting. Like Angelic Ascension. It's a 1 and a white for an instant. Exile target creature or planeswalker. Its controller creates a 4/4 white angel creature token with flying.
I'm not still sure how I feel about that one.
I mean, if you're facing a lot of boluses, it's a really good card. So, if big scary planeswalkers are like your weakness, this card is like, it's really good. Because a 4/4 angel isn't as scary as a nickel bolus. Don't you agree?
But I'm not sure if I'm gonna put it in my deck.
I think it's okay to test.
A card that I'm sad that exists. Rambunctious Mutt. Because we were talking in Alesha Discord, which you should guys join, we are all cool people there. Why doesn't a white have an, what's the name of the sage? When he comes into play, he destroys Artifact Enchantment, the green one. You know the elf. Reclamation Sage.
Yeah.
Why doesn't he have a Reclamation Sage? And then the same day they show this one. For 3 white, it's a 3/4. And there's a battle to destroy the Artifact Enchantment.
Yeah. At 5 mana, it's not that playable.
And I think there was one more card
I'm just gonna go quickly over some cards. There's Teferi's Tutelage, which is, so it's a 3 mana enchantment that whenever you draw a card, target opponent mills 2 cards, and that's literally the wording now.
Oh yeah!
So milling is an actual word, and mill means they put the top 2 cards of their library into their graveyard. So milling is back in standard.
Doesn't milling mean they just put card from the library to graveyard?
And then it says how
much they mill.
I mean, it says here because they mill 2 cards, so they put the top 2 cards.
How you said it meant a bit different.
Yeah, I know. There's also Eliminate, a really good removal spell. So it's a 1 and a black for an instant. Destroy target creature or planeswalker with converted mana cost 3 or less. Fierce Empath, reprinted. Now it's in all formats. And now, you can play it in your limited to fetch Colossal Dreadmaw again.
But the problem with that is the opponent scoop immediately. So. Nobody can face the power of the Colossal Dreadmaw.
Mm-hmm. That's it for
comments and
for those colors. And now in multicolor we have some pretty exciting stuff.
So first, Rin and Seri, Inseparable. So we were talking shit on cats or dogs, depending on how we see it, right?
Mm-hmm.
For 1 red, green, and white, it's a 4/4 legendary creature, dog cat. But not, you know, as from the cartoon, spliced together, but actually a cat and a dog.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever you cast a dog spell, create a 1/1 green cat creature token. Whenever you cast a cat spell, create a 1/1 white dog creature token.
And then Naya and Tap, they deal damage to any target equal to number of dogs you control. You get life number of cats.
So this is a really... This, I think they hit the spot for this Biobox promo.
You can't say that this is overpowered.
You really can't. But you can say that this will be very popular.
Yeah, of course. It's a cat and a dog.
And so you can make a cat. You can make a cat tribal. You can make a dog tribal. You can make a cat dog tribal.
Yeah.
So
easy.
Out of the box, you have three ways to build your deck.
There you go. What more do you need?
Nothing.
There we go.
What's next? So next up we have Nyambi, esteemed speaker. So this is Teferi's daughter. White and a blue for a 2/1 legendary creature human cleric with flesh. Oh, it's a human. Uh-oh. So when Nyambi, esteemed speaker, enters the battlefield, you may return another target creature you control to its owner's hand. If you do, you gain life equal to that creature's converted mana cost. It also has 1 blue, white, tap, discard a legendary card, draw 2 cards. So it gives all your legendary creatures like grandeur. Something similar to grandeur.
She's interesting and fine.
Yeah, I think this is really cool because in non-commander formats where you can actually have 4 legendaries, you cycle your legendaries for 2 cards. She can also save your stuff.
Yep.
But she can't, another Nyambi can't save the other Nyambi without dying. Which is kind of tragic.
I mean, if they were trying to, what's the name of blood spell, that Mono Red plays? Searing Blood, right? You can always, you know, play your second Nyambi to protect...
To protect your life.
Yes.
But yeah, it also says discard a legendary card. So you can discard anything, like lands and artifacts and planeswalkers, not just creatures.
Sorceries.
So yeah, it's a cool card. I don't see it as a commander card, but as a 99 card, sure.
Definitely. Something like your good old friend, the Captain Sisse. But the other one.
Yeah, it can save your legends. And it can draw your cards. And it's tutorable. So yeah, sure.
Yeah, she's cool. What's next up? Dementor?
What does it do?
So Conclave Mentor for green and white, it's a 2/2 central cleric. If one or more +1/+1 counters will be put on a creature you control, that many +1/+1 counters are put in that creature instead. When it dies, you gain life equal to its power. So basically it's the scales, right?
Yeah, the snack.
Both,
it's like the snack.
It's a secondary stack.
Yeah. There's a difference between this and the snake, is that the snake could actually make you die from infect a lot faster. Well, this can't. Maybe white and green is better for hardened skills than black and green. Well, we'll see.
Remains to be seen. What's next up? I think the first in colorless is something you need to talk about.
Oh, yeah. So, the first one in colorless is a reprint. And it's a big one. So, it's Ugin the Spirit Dragon.
Eugene is back.
And he's back in a format that is very ramp intense.
Ooh.
Yeah, I see Standard having slight issues for the next 3 months.
Well, that can be fixed.
Does it really? Does it actually have to be fixed? I mean, it's just 3 months.
Niksha, what have you seen from Standard? It always needs to be fixed.
I mean, I have seen a lot of things that need to be fixed, like Nissa should be banned. No. Uro shouldn't exist.
It's a fine card.
Teferi shouldn't exist.
You're biased.
I mean, I'm a green player and I say that Nissa shouldn't exist, so... Actually, Nissa is fine, but the other things that that help Nissa shouldn't be there. Like, this is too much ramp in a short period of time. But in 3 months, everything will fix itself. So, there's...
And be replaced by more problems.
Nah. I mean, what? Oh, wait. Uro isn't rotating out, so...
Haha!
Nah, it's fine. It's fine. But, okay, so this... I see this is a prime opportunity to... If you don't have Ugin and you want it, this will be the best...
Get him.
The best time to get them, because they dropped now, but they're not gonna be cheap forever. I mean, cheap.
Mm-hmm.
The cheap, like, compared to before. Cheap.
Are you finally gonna get more than one Ugin?
I am, and I'm probably going to try to get alternate arts. The showcase
Sweet.
Frame. Because
for the listeners who don't know, Niksha has been playing Tron for years with only one Ugin.
And also one Karn.
And he's been doing remarkably well.
I mean, four Karns are more important than four Ugins, but...
Yeah, but you get what you can get.
But for Pioneer ramp, you kind of need four Ugins to, you know, stabilize you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And also the showcase frame. Is like extended, is almost, well, full art, so it
Ooh.
Looks wonderful.
What's next up if you're done gushing over Eugene?
Sure, yeah. Here's another, seven mana card.
So for all of you Command Zone fans, Chromatic Orrery, seven generic mana, legendary artifact. You may spend mana as though it were mana of any color. Tap, add 5 generic. 5 in a tap, draw a card for each color among the permanents you control. Those guys from Esper that can for 3 mana untap an artifact, right?
Yeah.
Have fun! Because you'll draw your entire deck and do whatever the hell you want with it.
So yeah, it's an easy 2 card combo. And
mm-hmm.
Chromatic Orrery is, well, it's a legendary artifact. I just noticed that now, so...
Haha!
Wow, Sissy can tutor for this.
There you go.
But Sissy cannot tutor for the blue guys that untap it, because they're not even in your color.
See, if we were better podcasters, we'd know the name of the card. We would look for it.
Vedalkin something, whatever.
Well, shut up.
But... look, I'm gonna say, Chromatic Orrery is, I'm gonna call it a questionable card. As far as I know, I didn't actually watch the episode of Command Zone where they revealed it, but I heard that they didn't like it as well as much.
It's seven.
Because it's seven mana, that's like...
It says million on the card.
It basically says a million mana to get...
Look, you can't tap three lands to get this play, but you much rather get Karn with those three lands than this.
Well, here's the thing. If you get with your three lands, you can get Chromatic Orrery, and then you can use just three lands to activate Golos.
Okay, let me rephrase.
That's all I'm gonna say.
If you're a sane player, you would much rather get Karn in play. However, Niksha has always had questionable metas that work more often than they should. So why am I actually saying anything to Niksha?
Well, I'm just saying that I will probably try to find a spot in Golos for Chromatic Orrery, because it... Oh, what I'm saying. Chromatic Orrery is a card that will probably replace Damia. Because Damia's function... Well, first off, it's a very nostalgic card to me, because it's one of my first commanders after the precons, which I kept for a long, long time. But also Dame is foil, and she draws cards, like, and Golos can just empty its hand, and you know, you don't have any hand, and Damia fixes that. Well, Chromatic Orrery kind of fixes that part, and it also fixes the part where, you know, I have a Tron land in my Golos deck. I have Tron assembled, but it kind of doesn't pay for Golos except for the two generic. And well, now, you can just pay for Golos with just your Tron.
Hey.
Also, all those mana doublers, if you double a lot of green sources, you still can't pay for Golos. And now you actually can.
Huzzah.
So I can see more functions for Chromatic Orrery than I would actually like to see.
I mean, if anybody is gonna make it work, it's gonna be.
Yeah. Chromatic Orrery, I would advise against playing it.
But you'll still do it.
I would advise people to not play it in any format unless you have a really straight combo line with it. Like with the Vedalken, let's call them architects. They're not architects, probably. Because the Vedalken architects, they actually set either your top three cards or your opponent's top three cards. So yeah, it's not
architects. I think you look at your own top three cards. That's the cycling guys, right?
I think he says your or your opponent's.
Okay, whatever.
Okay, what's the next card? Whatever. Solemn Simulacrum. Reprint
with the pitching art.
Yeah,
and the showcase art is basically ultra.
Yeah, also pretty bitching.
Anything else we took from the colors?
With Tormod's Crypt reprint, that's Palladium Mirror reprint.
That's a good one.
even more ramp. Okay, sure. And the last card we can actually talk about is the Spark Hunter Masticore. So, you want to do it, or?
So, it's a 3 generic, it's a 3-4 Masticore. As the additional cost to cast a spell, discard a card, I don't mind that. Protection from Planeswalkers, that's interesting. 1 generic, it deals 1 damage to target Planeswalker. And 3 generic, it gains indestructible to end of turn. This guy really hates spells.
Yeah, he does. And it's actually a really good rate. For 3 mana, you get a 3-4. That's really good, in colorless even. The cost of discarding a card is kind of, like, problematic if it gets countered, because you just lost 2 cards. Because it's an additional cost, not when it enters the battlefield. But it does make it more viable. To get rid of Planeswalkers, because for 1 mana dealing 1 damage to a Planeswalker, that's pretty good. But then again, if you're worried about Planeswalkers, you would play Hex Parasite. Because Hex Parasite just, you know, fits in any deck. You pay X and kill a Planeswalker. And it's 2 mana. And it doesn't have protection from Planeswalkers, but that's not really important when you're killing them on the spot.
Yep. And lands, we have 2 cards to mention.
Yeah, the temples are a reprint, which is
okay.
Yeah, but not very optimal, because the there are still no friendly pain lands in Pioneer.
One more.
Only enemy play lands.
But Fabled Passage is here.
Oh, Fabled Passage? Well, this is really weird, really, because Fabled Passage isn't rotating out. And by the time the Fabled Passage rotates out, both of the versions are rotating out.
Oh, well, yeah. But so, I guess it's to give the players more, you know, access to Fabled Passage.
Yeah, but it's kind of like it was in Throne of Eldraine. Then it was reprinted in two Challenger decks. And now it's reprinted in the core set.
Oh, well.
That's a lot of reprints for Fabled Passage.
But make sure, what's the meme land?
Oh, Animal Sanctuary.
Yes.
So Animal Sanctuary is a land. It taps for taps to add colorless. For two and a tap, put a +1/+1 counter on target bird, cat, dog, goat, ox, or snake.
Yes. do you have a meme deck by any chance? Yes, you have. Here, most likely, this is going to cover.
I just noticed the flavor text. No owners allowed.
Yeah. I mean, this is a super niche land that like six people are going to be thrilled about, and I'm happy for those six people.
I mean, all the bird, cat, and dog tribal decks...
Dakes?
All the bird, cat, dog, and snake tribal decks will want this land. Let's not forget about Snekusar, because this makes Snekusar a bit better.
Oh, yeah. Also Arabo, I guess.
No, I'm going to more lean towards Nekusar because drawing extra cards. And your opponent won't draw any extra cards because obviously you have Narset in play.
Haha.
But yeah, this concludes Master 21. I mean,
for
Court
the time being,
21.
Most of the good cards got already previewed, so yeah.
I mean... That's what I thought, like, a couple of days ago, and then suddenly, like, blam, Scavenging Ooze. I was like, okay.
Sweet.
Alright. I mean, there is still, there's still one blue and one green mythic missing. Unless they're not.
But we'll talk about it, I guess, in the following week? Question mark?
So yeah, this set is looking very exciting.
Haven't been excited in a core set like this in a while.
It has really good reprints, it has really good new cards, and it doesn't seem very powerful, and that's actually a good thing. Because I think that also these Planeswalkers are like, this is what Planeswalkers should have always looked like. Like,
yes.
They give you an advantage, but they're not oppressive. These can't win the game by themselves. You need the rest of your deck. And, you know, they're not Tree Fairy, so, you know, anything that's not Tree Fairy is completely fine.
So, that's it for this week?
Yeah.
Because it's getting a bit late.
Yeah, it's getting a bit late, and we've been going on for quite some time.
And I do work tomorrow, Saturday. Well, this has been episode 116 of the Elder Dragon Dural Podcast. This is your host, Igor, and as always with me, my partner in crime, Niksha. Say bye, Niksha.
Bye, Niksha. And I'm hoping we're gonna do some more... more deck techs, because last time was pretty fun. Yeah, I'll look into looking to do some deck there, I guess.
Sweet.
I'll try. Okay, see you guys, and as always,
the Emperor Protect.